Hello, I'm John Burns, and welcome to my winter news. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't going to make a podcast, but when I got onto my WordPress site to send a written blog, it wouldn't let me. I must have transgressed the unwritten rules of WordPress blogging. So, you know what they say, if you've got oranges, make orange juice. Oh, that might be lemons, actually. But anyway, whatever it is. But I decided to, here I am making a podcast. And I'm going to bring you my news of the winter so far. I'm going to talk about some bothy news. I've been to Mull looking for whales. And I've witnessed the rot in October. That's the deer mating season. And I've also been getting some very close encounters with mountain hares. So I'm going to be talking about all that and a little bit about farmed salmon as well. But before I do any of that, I'd just like to talk to you about a little book that's come out recently. It's selling very well, Scottish Island Bagging by Helen and Paul Webster. It's a lovely little book. It covers all 99 of the sort of most popular Scottish islands. I don't know how many Scottish islands there are. There must be thousands of them, I guess. But there's sort of 99 of the main islands that you can get to reasonably easily, you know, without a helicopter, basically. But the Scottish islands are fantastic places. I've been visiting Mull a lot recently, and there are incredible places to get to know. They're wild and rugged, and each island really has got its own character, its own personality. And I always think of Mull as a very green place. It's got a lot of trees and forestry. Of course, it's world famous for its wildlife, its otters and its seagulls. Beautiful place. And in Paul and Helen Webster's book, they really tell you all about the islands, how to get there, and they also give you a description of some of the things that you can do on the islands. So if you've never been to Scottish Islands, or even if you have and there's some that you'd like to go to, it's a great book to get. It talks about Mull, it talks about Arran, it talks about the kind of food you can get, and it talks about wildlife. And it also talks, obviously, to hill walkers about some of the routes and the climbs, the mountains that you can find, particularly on places like Skye and the Coolin, places like that. So, you know, it's a great little book. I really recommend it. And it's published by my good friends at Vertebrate. So you can't get better than that, really, can you? I suppose since I'm plugging books, I'll plug my own books. The Last Hill Walk is doing really well at the moment, right up there as a bestseller. I'm absolutely amazed at how well it's done, to be honest. You know, it was 40 years it took me to write it in a way, I suppose. My bumblings in the hills, that's basically what it is. but it seems to strike a chord with people, and I'm really grateful for everybody who's come back and given me some feedback on The Last Hill Walker. And all my books are, of course, fantastic Christmas presents. There's the hint, see? I'll give you some bothy news. Bothies are becoming very, controversial these days. There's a few accounts of some shenanigans that have been going on in bothies. A little bit of bad behaviour going on. I heard that there was one bloke who was so obsessed with keeping the bothy to himself that when some other people turned up, he threw a bucket of water over the fire and stormed off. Well, that is a cardinal sin. Putting, you can throw buckets of water over people, that's one thing, but you never put the fire out, you know. And I also heard that in Geldershiel Bothy there were some people laying claim to the place and claiming that people had to be in bed by 7 or whatever, and just being complete arseholes, basically. So just a word, I'm really pleased to basically that more people seem to be visiting Bothies. I think it's really important that people who've never been to them go there, feel comfortable, feel they can go out into the outdoors. But obviously the other side of that is to respect the place, respect the Bothy, respect the land, and respect the other people you find there. Don't be a complete prat, basically. Don't cut down live wood. If, take coal in with you, prepare for it. Work out whether, if you've never been to a Bothy before, good idea. Make sure it's a simple one to get to. Talk to other people who've maybe been there. Ask a few questions of the Facebook pages that are out there. There's plenty of information on Bothies if you want to find it out. And, you go there. But remember, you're not visiting a Sunday school. There'll be people there who might want to sit around and blether late into the night. You know, it has been known in Bothies, so you just have to be accepting of that. I've been visiting Bothies for a long, long time, many years, and I have to admit, I have met the odd bore, but I've never met anybody worse than that. But other people perhaps have met me, and I could be the sort of person they don't want to run into. I don't know. So that's my Bothy news, a bit of a plea for decent behaviour in Bothies. And as I said, I've been to Mull, fantastic place. I never get over how big some of these places are. Mull is, I think it's got about 230 miles of coastline. That's one island, okay? And if you want to drive to the tip of Mull, where the Isle of Iona is from the ferry that I get onto, that is a 40-mile drive on one island. And you've got to remember that this is 40 miles of single-track road, where you might run into cows and camper vans and all sorts of stuff. So it's a long 40 miles. But I went on to the Sea Life Survey boat there. It was fantastic. We went out of Mull on Tobermory Harbour, a beautiful day. And got bounced around a bit in the old boat, I have to say. And we went out to past the point of Ardnamurchan, and we happened to see loads of dolphins. We were hoping to see whales, and there were whales about. Although every time I looked one way, the whales surfaced the other direction. So I never actually saw any whales. But to be honest, it was great to get so close to the dolphin. You know, the dolphin was swimming right by the boat, and they sort of surf. There must have been about 150 of them. And they kind of surf on the bow wave of the boat. That's a great sight. I've never seen that before. Not so close. We were so close to them, you could actually hear the clicks. You know, the little communication clicks they make. It was great. I really recommend it. I'm a landlubber, really. I'm not really very good on the water. I'm not particularly good on the land sometimes, I have to admit. But I'm really starting to get into exploring the sort of marine environment that that surrounds our British Isles, our Scottish coast. I'm doing these things, really researching for Wild Winter, my next book, and it's good because it's taking me places I wouldn't normally go. I probably wouldn't normally have gone out on a boat like that, but writing the book's taking me to those places, and that's a great thing to do. So I really recommend that. It's a great thing to do. Go to Mull, to Tobermory, and get yourself on one of these whale watching boats. It's a great thing to do. I've also been out. Well, in October, I went out to Strathcollen, a place about 25 miles from where I live. I went out in the dark. I went out in the middle of the bloody night, you know. I had to get up at 4 in the morning. Yeah. This was to see the rut. I don't know why wildlife can't keep normal social hours, you know. But anyway, it doesn't. So me and James Roddy, who's a local wildlife guide, he took me up into Strathcollen, and we basically went a few miles into the hills and hid in a wood in the dark and then just sat there very quietly and waited for it to get light. It was an amazing thing to do because as it got light, below us there was, I'm not quite sure what you call it really, it's a sort of place where stags rut. There's a rutting ground, let's call it that. And I've heard stags rutting, which is like they're when they mate. That's an amazing call, I suppose. Many, many times in the hills, but I've never actually seen stags engaging, where they lock antlers and fight, and that is quite something to see. And they're not daft stags; they don't like to fight. So what they do is they'll try and face each other down and show off how big they are and prance about. But sometimes when you get stags that are evenly matched, they've got no choice but to slug it out. And it's pretty dangerous for them because stags are not infrequently killed in those kind of fights. If they take an antler in the side or something like that, those wounds don't kind of heal, you know. And it's also a pretty rough time for the stags because it's more or less over October and into early November is the rutting season, when they're trying to impress the females and get these harems of hinds together. so that their genes can be perpetuated, you know. But it's hard on them because they don't really have much time to feed, and they're constantly fighting and constantly trying to preserve their little harems of ladies. And that's pretty demanding, as we all know. And, you know, they lose about a quarter of their body weight, something like that. It's pretty hard going. So I saw that, but I witnessed that for the first time, again for the book. And, well, I'll write about it, you can read about it, you know. But it was really good to do. Also with James, a great thing we did, we went into the Monolea Hills, which are to the south of Inverness, about 15 miles from here. And we wanted to track down and to get as close as we could to mountain hare. Now, I don't know if many of you have seen mountain hares, but they're fantastic creatures, really. I've seen quite a lot of mountain hares, but mostly just running about 50 miles away in the opposite direction. Normally, when you're walking through the hills, you don't see them because they're really well camouflaged. And then when you get close to them, they just take off. So basically, I've seen a lot of mountain hare backsides in my hill walking career. But with James, he knows where they sit, the sort of holts where they live, and basically by approaching them very steadily and very carefully, and keeping very low down, the hares will sometimes let you get to them within about 10 feet, and they just sit there. And the one that we saw was just sitting there dozing and watching us, and opening its eyes now and again and dozing a bit. And it was quite happy that this old man, his geezer, wasn't going to bother it, you know. And it, fantastic sight, though. You don't realise what beautiful creatures. And their camouflage is incredible. You can when we went up there, it's been very cold this November, thankfully. And when we went up there, there was patches of snow and heather and grass. And, you know, you can... I must have walked past thousands of hares and never even seen them. They're so well camouflaged, beautiful creatures. And, you know, it's such a tragedy that mountain hares are slaughtered in Scotland in their thousands, mainly to protect driven grouse shooting. They're supposed to carry ticks, and the ticks are supposed to infect the grouse with the disease, leaping. Can't remember what it's called now. But there's no real scientific proof of that. But despite that, they are slaughtered in their thousands. I think that's something that we really ought to be addressing in Scotland. But it was really nice to get so close to mountain hare. And it was pretty cold up there. We've had one of the best Novembers, as far as I'm concerned, in the Highlands for a long time. It's been very cold. We've had snow, brilliant frosty mornings, lovely sunlit days. It's really the sort of weather that you kind of dream of. So I'm just hoping and praying, because I'm writing Wild Winter, that we do have a wild winter, you know. That would be great, wouldn't it? Okay, and the last thing I want to talk about, I was up in the far north watching seal pups, and that's put me more in touch with a sort of issue that's happening to them. Seals are actually shot round our coasts, would you believe? It just staggers me what goes on. This is mainly by fish farms to protect their stock, but these are all wild creatures, and they're slaughtered as well. And salmon farming, I have to say, is really a practice that I think it's time that we put an end to. It's a totally artificial thing to breed salmon in cages. That's not naturally where they'd be. And so in order to maintain them, they have to be treated for sea lice. They a lot of them just die. That it's really hard for the salmon farmers to maintain these populations, and it's getting harder. And each little salmon farm, well, they're not that little actually, I suppose. But what happens is you've got a mass of fish in one area, and they're fed. All their feed drops through the nets, and it coats the bottom of the sea lock, and all the fish feces all drifts down as well. It causes masses of pollution, and it's damaging our wild salmon stock. So what I would suggest, very simple solution: if I've stopped eating farm salmon, if you stop too, then we can end salmon farming. And that would be no bad thing, I think, in the Scottish Highlands. Well, that's me. That's my little podcast. I hope it's been some use to you. And just thanks again. Do get in touch if you've got any questions. If you know how to work WordPress, you know how I can restore the fact that I can write blogs again. I'd be really handy if you could let me know. Anyway, that's been me. I've been John Burns. I do hope you've enjoyed my little podcast. And I'll speak to you soon. Take care then. Bye.